This is the Business Storytelling Show, a top global marketing podcast listened to in more than 100 countries, live streamed on social media, and broadcast on DBTV. Christoph Trapp chats with industry leaders to help your company tell better business stories. Here's today's episode.
Hey, 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 business storytellers. How's everyone doing? Thanks for joining me. We are back live on Amazon because today's guest is an author, the Great Resignation Engagement, rather. Tom Willis, he's going to join me on the show today. And everything you see around me, basically, you can have in the carousel below. So if you're watching on DBTV, just search for Christoph Trapp on Amazon and you head on over there. Before we get to Tom, really quickly, I do like my LaCroix. You can order that right there on Amazon as well, because, you know, you got to stay hydrated, right? As you're talking and getting information from all these awesome, awesome guests. If you have any comments, feel free to leave them. We'll try to pull them up. We'll try to answer them on air if they are relevant. But let's get to today's guest. We want to talk about why coaching is important in the workplace and who should do the coaching. Traditionally, you know, I am not a millennial. Somebody gave me a hard time about the millennial pause the other day. I get it, but I'm a young Gen Xer. And certainly, you know what? And when I grew up, who was the coach? The boss. But who should be the coach today? Let's find out from Tom Willis. You can scan his book right here, The Great Engagement, currently $18.62. I think that's the paperback version. Tom, welcome to the show.
Hey, Christoph, thanks for having me.
Nice to see you. Congratulations on the successful book launch. Very interesting read. Always appreciate when people actually send me a review copy before they come on the show. So, you know, I can kind of dive in. So really appreciate that. Tom, tell me about why this book, why is this topic important? And then specifically, let's dive into coaching. Why is that such an important factor when it comes to engaging the workforce?
Yeah, well, it's all about creating exceptional cultures, which we really need desperately in the country and in the world, frankly. If I were to ask you, Christoph, what percent of employees are engaged in their work in the United States? What would you guess?
Well, I think I read that somewhere the other day. I don't know. It's not very many, maybe like 40% or something. But when you ask that, I'm like, what does that even mean to be engaged anyways, right? Like, I'm ready to go. Like, I'm here. Let's go. Let's rock the day. Or does it mean I'm just doing my job? Or does it, you know, what does it mean? Like, I heard about the whole thing, not to go down this rabbit hole, Tom, but like the whole quiet quitting. And then when somebody explained to me what quiet quitting is, it's like basically doing your job. I'm like, what a bunch of crap. So, but anyway, let's not go down that rabbit hole perhaps, but why are people, what is the right number and why are people not engaged?
Yeah, just a few weeks ago, Gallup released their updated survey results, and they do a nice job, I think. And there's lots of questions they use to assess that engagement. But it's pretty much what you think it is, right? If someone's engaged in their work, if they actually care more than just a paycheck, then that's a pretty good indicator of engagement. And it's down to an 11-year low of 30%, which is really, really sad if you think about it. That means 70% of folks are actively disengaged, just kind of checked out, collecting a paycheck, or maybe worse than that, they genuinely hate their jobs. And I think that's sad. And I think it's ultimately something leadership should be looking seriously at too. Because when you can create an exceptional culture, then you attract exceptional human beings and you're gonna have better success, whether it's a school system or a for-profit or an engineering firm or whatever, it doesn't matter. It's the same idea that the more actively engaged employees and team members you have, the better results you're going to get.
You know, what's interesting to me about that too, without going into too many details of who it is and what they do, but there is an organization, and I know for a fact that there's problems, right? Like leadership on down, horrible leadership, toxic. I don't work there. I got really nothing to do with them. I just know about it. And so then they came up in a conversation with somebody completely unrelated, right, to like everything that I knew. And they just brought them up and they're like, yeah, I think there is something going on there because like everybody's just very grumpy, very rude, very, you know, not like very nice. So certainly I think it does trickle down. But when it comes to coaching, I mean, give me the definition of like for lack of a better term, what is coaching in the workplace and how does it look?
Yeah, well, I'll start with a story, which is comes from this model called the SCARF model. And I won't get into the details of that, but if you want to look it up, it's SCARF, as you would imagine. Each one of those letters stands for something. And embedded in that, they talk about how they wired people's brains up to see how they would react to different things. And they found that asking somebody if they're open to feedback produces the same reaction in their brain as hearing footsteps in the dark behind you. So if you think about that, you know, we've got these organizational cultures and teams where, you know, everyone's saying you're supposed to give people feedback, you're supposed to be giving people feedback. Well, I don't disagree with that, but how you do it matters significantly. And that's where you're either destroying your culture or you're building your culture. And it's either or, by the way. You're either improving your culture or you're detracting from it on a day-to-day, sometimes hour-by-hour basis. And so what's really critical, we think, is that coaching is different than feedback. Feedback is like, I'm going to give it to you whether you want it or not. Coaching, in our opinion, is only asked for. It's when somebody is open to it, when they can genuinely listen to it, because they're interested in what you have to say as a way of improving themselves, then they're going to listen to it. And so it's really, really critical if you're going to create a coaching culture that you allow people to say no, because if they can't say no, then they can't say yes with integrity. And so that's really, really foundational. Now, there's another key component to coaching, which is you've got to lead first. There's really three tools that you have, primary tools to shape a culture. One is leadership, one is management, and one is coaching. Three words that I'm sure everybody has heard of, but very few people slow down to distinguish those words from each other. So leadership has to come first. If we don't have a shared sense of future, even if it's just a 30-minute meeting, what's the end of the meeting? What's the future? What are we going for? Why are we here? It's why so many people hate meetings and why we waste so much time in meetings, because we don't even know what we're there for. What's the outcome we're going for? Or it could be a 50-year vision to change the world. You know, that's a really compelling future, or purpose, or mission, or whatever you want to call it. So you have to lead first. You have to have a shared sense of future together. And then and only then can you manage and coach folks.
Yeah, what's interesting to me too is when you talk about feedback, I mean, sometimes feedback, like if you're the manager or supervisor or boss, whatever, I mean, it's feedback, but it's also like the expectation, right? Like, here's what we are trying to do. Here's why we're trying to do it. But when you talk about coaching, I mean, certainly every company has expectations. And our friends to the north, I don't hear this in the US too much, but in Canada, I always hear people say, what's the mandate of this job, right? And like, maybe they don't mean it as bossy as it sounds to me. But if somebody were to say that to me in the US, I'd be like, that is like really bossy. Like, what's the mandate? You know, like, what am I trying to do? You know, like, so when you have more buy-in, certainly people, I think in general, probably do a better job. But how do you know who should do the coaching? I mean, you think about the Peter principle, right? Like, you get promoted until you fail just because you were good at the last job. Now, all of a sudden, you know, you're promoted. But just because you get the higher title doesn't mean you should be the coach, or how does that look in reality?
Yeah, great question. And actually, we believe it's like a spider web, meaning that anybody can coach anybody. Because none of us is perfect. I don't care if you're a seasoned CEO or you're on the first day of the job as a custodian, right? That everybody has a different perspective that can be valuable to somebody else. You know, that new custodian may notice something that could be really, really helpful to the CEO, because the CEO is so far away from the front lines that they've completely lost touch with reality, and vice versa. So in a true coaching culture, that's what happens, is anybody is able to coach anybody else. Now, does that happen with pure nirvana? No, of course not. We're human beings and nothing is perfect. But when you can get a culture where it's 60%, 70%, 80% of folks doing that, and they're just open to each other's ideas and coaching, and if they're not saying, no, I can't handle that right now, you know, let's talk about it next week, then that's what we're really talking about, is this sort of complex web of connections between the organization. It could be four people or it could be 4,000 people.
You know what I find interesting about too, when it comes to anybody could do it, I mean, agreed, conceptually speaking, but how do you actually find the time? So when you talk about meetings, and I have, like, there's good meetings and then there's bad meetings, right? And typically the bad meetings, it is usually some combination of, it's just like there's too much what feels like a waste of time, right? Like you're talking about stuff that doesn't apply to you, or like it didn't really need a discussion. It could have just been a Slack message or an email or something like that. But how in the world, where everybody only has so much time, how do we actually find the time for coaching and, you know, working with somebody who can actually teach us something?
Yeah, great question. As my friend likes to say, unless you're a wizard, you cannot control time, right? So we all have the same 24 hours a day. In fact, Bill Gates talks about the rule of 1440, which means we have 1440 minutes every single day. It doesn't matter if you're Bill Gates or whoever. If you're a human being, that's just how the math works, and it's a rule. So it's not so much a matter of time. It's more a matter of priority and where you've got your focus. What we've found, frankly, is that most leaders get promoted up because they're really good at getting stuff done. And then you hit that Peter principle that you talked about. Well, the challenge is that when you're the leader of a team, your primary job is no longer to get stuff done directly. It's to get stuff done through others. It's to lead them. It's to grow your people. It's to make them better. But that shift is a huge shift that many leaders have a hard time making. And so if you get back to like, what's your fundamental job? Well, your fundamental job is to grow your people. What's one of the best tools in your toolkit for growing your people? Coaching. So make time for it. It's really that simple. And it doesn't need to take a lot of time. I've literally coached Uber drivers in a 10-minute car ride where they walked away or I walked away. They stayed in the car and they were like, oh my gosh, wow, that was really helpful. So it's not a matter of time. It is a matter of practice, and it is a matter of getting better at it so that it can be helpful to others. Too often when we start coaching, we're focused on ourselves and focused on what we think we need or trying to accomplish our end goals. Whereas really effective coaching is focused on how to be helpful to the other person.
You know, the other thing that I sometimes think about is, it doesn't always have to be so formal, as you said. You know, I mean, you do it in an Uber ride. And I think sometimes people go, oh, how do I get some more training? And I'm thinking, you know, if you don't get any training or coaching or you don't learn anything just in doing your job, like maybe it is the culture, or maybe you're in the wrong job, right? I mean, it's like you're overqualified might be the wrong term, but, you know, like there's nothing to learn. I mean, I have done what I do for a number of years, and I learn something new all the time from all kinds of people. You know what I mean? Doesn't make any difference where they sit in an organization. Sometimes I just learn it because I see something. It's like, oh, you know, maybe I should try that. Maybe we should, you know, that's how these live streams happen, right? I was on Jason Falls' podcast many years ago, and he was live streaming. I was like, hold on a second. What are you doing? Why do you have your iPad in front of you? And now we have a live podcast, right? So, but let's maybe shift just a little bit when it comes to cultures and engagement and those kind of things. Why is it happening that so many people are disengaged? I mean, are their expectations too high? Is it just like people don't have time? People don't even know what employees are after? Or why is it at an all-time low? Or high, depending how you look at it.
Yeah, why is it so sadly low as far as people actively engaged? And I wish I had a crystal ball and could give you like a concise answer to that. But I think a lot of it is that as a society, we're sort of a dopamine culture. You know, we literally, if you think about just how we take in content, right? A long time ago, you were lucky if you had a paper to read or a book. And then it went to radio, and we could listen to people talk, right? And then we went to TV, movies, and then YouTube. And now what do we have? 15, 20-second clips on the various channels. So as a society, we're sort of hooked on the dopamine release, which means we we have shorter and shorter attention spans. And at the same time, we're putting more of our own sort of agency on others and on organizations. I think that many folks are looking for fulfillment and happiness and for the organization to provide it for them. And it needs to be both. So in our book, we lay out this formula for engagement. We thought long and hard about this based on, we've been doing this work for over 30 years. We actually promise results to the CEOs and the school superintendents that we work with, which is very unusual in this line of work to actually promise results. So we've got some credibility around this. And what we've learned is that if you really simplify it, we create this elegant formula that engagement is aspiration times empowerment. It's those two elements, aspiration and empowerment. So if you unpack those a little bit, aspiration is different than inspiration, right? It's aspiration is somebody has an aspiration, it's intrinsic, it's theirs. They own it. And if I aspire to something, then I don't need my boss to convince me, it's mine. And then empowerment's pretty straightforward, right? We have to empower people and trust them to do their job. It doesn't mean a carte blanche, blank check. It just means giving them the appropriate authority and power to do their job. And too often we don't do that in corporate cultures or in organizational cultures. So that's really the solution, we think, is that we need to slow down and help people find out what do they aspire to, what do they care about, and then help them to map that onto the organization. And too often we do it backwards. We start with the organizational purpose, and then we say, okay, everybody salute the flag and buy into the mission statement. That works for some, but for most it doesn't, because it's not theirs. They don't own that. The best you're going to get usually is compliance, not genuine commitments. But when you've got, let's say you've got 100 people on your team and all of them have their own aspiration, and then they figure out how to map that aspiration that they care about onto the purpose of the organization, now you've got a team that's on fire and moving towards the future.
Yeah, it's interesting. I wonder how much of this happens because, so back in the day, right? I mean, even my generation, like you would go to the same place for like decades, right? And you would never leave. I mean, no offense, United Way has done some good things in the world, in the U.S., you know, but the reason that worked, the model of United Way, is because they would go into workplaces and people would give because their boss would say, give to United Way, right? And they would be there so for 30 years, and that's where they would be. And now today, people just leave jobs like right and left, you know, and then companies lay off people and they go somewhere else. And then there's like, it's a lot more fluid, right? You don't stick with one company, but then some companies behave like you have to stick with them for 30 years, but you don't have to. So why, I mean, is that, am I just making that up, or is that part of the problem? What's going on? We have these colliding behaviors to an extent.
Yeah, we actually lay that out in a recent article that we wrote about how the world is just changing so fast, obviously with AI and everything else going on, that it used to be sufficient to kind of have generational change. You know, you would learn things, you'd go to school. If you're lucky, you'd go to high school. If you were really lucky, you went to college and you had the tools you needed, right? For probably 20, 30 years. Well, now we're to the point where we need like intergenerational change, or like almost every year we need to retool our toolkit. We need to learn new skills because we can't keep up otherwise. And I think that's one of the challenges we're seeing, is that people are having a hard time with that. Understandably so, we all are. We all are trying to keep up with the fast pace and the changing world. But it does require a level of consciousness of slowing down and saying, okay, what am I going to need to be more effective? And again, as leaders, we have to own that. It doesn't mean that we're 100% responsible, but actually adopting that mindset, like, okay, this is my responsibility to create a better team, a better culture. That's really a great place to start if you're going to go about doing this work. And there's lots of pragmatic ideas in our book, The Great Engagement. But it really gets down to like, what are you willing to commit to? And are you willing to go to work on improving your culture?
Yeah, it definitely takes effort, definitely takes a different mindset. What about communication? right? I mean, sometimes you have people who say, if something needs to be said, just say it, right? I mean, don't be a jerk about it. Don't be rude about it. Don't, attack me, but hey, we should work on this, blah, blah, blah. How about this? You know, like that kind of language. And then you have some people who talk around the topic so much that nobody actually understands what they're talking about or what the actual issue is, right? They're just like, they're circling the wagons, but you don't know what kind of wagons we're talking or where they're going or anything like that. What's the right level of communication? How important is that? And what does that mean even?
Yeah, great question. And I think a couple of thoughts here. One is that before the last 2 or 3 years, communication was the most popular, most common word that we heard when working with thousands of organizations across the country and into Europe, that it was always communication, communication, communication. What we've learned is that it's really an indicator that there's a relationship challenge. 90% of the time, it's a relationship challenge. But we don't want to say that, so we'll say the word communication. Because we're all getting enough communication. We all get plenty of emails. We all get plenty of news feeds, Facebook posts, tweets, whatever. We all get enough of that stuff. So there's plenty of communication typically, but there's not enough relationship building and really bringing folks together. And so we sort of excuse it away to communication. That, by the way, the word burnout is probably replacing that word as the most popular one that we've heard the last couple of years. Because even that's becoming more and more popular. And it's actually not a great way to think about it. Frankly, most people are not actually burned out. We're using the wrong language. Because if you're burnt out, if you think about it, you've got nothing left to give. You've already probably quit your job, in which case you were burnt out. But if you haven't yet, then you're at a different level, probably fatigue or exhaustion, and slowing down to think about what phase you're in can be really helpful. The other thing I want to speak to here is that, what you're really speaking about is we need to help people by creating more psychologically safe environments at work. But even that by itself is not enough. That's actually putting too much responsibility on the organization, I think. We need to also help individual people muster more psychological courage. So you need psychologically safe environments, but you also need psychological courage from the individuals to be willing to speak up. There's a great quote from Rollo May who talks about how courage is not just another value. It's like the value. It's the one that undergirds every other value. Without courage, you cannot have any other values. If you think about it, if you're not willing to speak up about something that you care about, then that value is worthless. And interestingly enough, the word courage actually comes from cœur, which is French for the heart. And so courage is like the heart. It pumps the blood through our body and gives us the ability to live out our other values. And so this is really simple, but really hard to do. We all have to be willing to speak up. We all have to be willing to say what needs to be said.
Absolutely. Well, hopefully people can move from the great resignation to the great engagement. Really appreciate you coming on the show, Tom, and continued good luck with the book.
Thanks for tuning in. Please rate and review The Business Storytelling Show on your favorite podcast platform and subscribe so you don't miss the next episode. See you then.